A Sapphire Running Zone podcast.
The London Marathon. What an amazing day. It's the subject of today's podcast. Hi, this is Tim, and today we are going to be looking at all things getting a place in the London Marathon. I've got with me Andy Etchells, who's the founder of Crunch, which is Charity Runners Clearinghouse. Andy's been in this space for many years, has helped a huge amount of runners get a spot in the marathon. Andy, welcome. Tell us all about these many years doing this and encouraging and helping and sourcing entries for all these runners.
Too many in some ways. I was a schoolboy, university and club runner, 8 marathons to my name in the days when I remember for the one marathon, Harlow in the late 70s, when people were going around with stunned looks on their faces saying, wow, there are 700 people running today and 50 of them are women. I mean, it was before, enough to say that it was before the running boom really got going. London Marathon, of course, started in 1981. Simultaneous with and after my serious running career, I was the founder editor of Jogging Magazine, which then kind of upped its pace to become Running Magazine. That was in the late 70s. In the early 90s, that became Runner's World as part of the worldwide network of the Runner's World magazines. And I left publishing in the mid-90s to set up the company which now brings Crunch to people. And that was influenced obviously by my knowledge of running and the marathon, but also the fact that my wife and I had started a charity as a result of something that had happened to us. It's the way lots of charities do start. And that happened to coincide with Dave Bedford, the then London Marathon race director, announcing the wonderful new thing called the Golden Bond Scheme. And that was a scheme under which charities that were bold enough, because in those days it was regarded as a little bit of a gamble and an unsure thing, but it coincided with the arrival of the Golden Bond Scheme, and our charity was one of the very first to buy a bond, which was 5 places, 5 guaranteed places for 5 years. And as a result of the work I did unpaid for that charity, I started then getting approached by other charities who heard how much money we were making from the marathon. And that was where Crunch started. Initially, we were called the Smaller Charities Clearinghouse because we were pitching ourselves at very small charities like we were. That was a bit of a mouthful. We then changed it to the Charity Runners Clearinghouse, for which the acronym is CRUNCH.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that. Now, obviously, everybody knows it's very, very difficult to get a London Marathon entry. And what a lot of people don't realise, of course, is how early you have to apply to the main ballot to actually even get through that stage. Because clearly there's 2 stages, one of which is entering the main ballot, and then the other one is applying to a charity. Some people don't bother with the first one and go straight to a charity, but most probably do want to go through the public ballot. Just talk us through the time frames of the ballot and how the charity entries then work alongside that.
Okay, well, let's start with what we think we know about the London Marathon, and I should stress at the outset that this is based on what has been the practice for the last 2 or 3 marathons. We don't have definitive information about the entry process for LM25, as we call it, but if it works as it has done in the last, last couple of years, it will look something like this. 2 Mondays after the actual race, this year's is on April 21st, the marathon will open the online ballot. So if we're right about that date, it will be Monday, April the 29th. The ballot then stays open for 5 working days, one week, closes on the evening of the following Friday, which again, if we've got these dates right, will be Friday, May 3rd. And basically, if it follows last year, about 500,000 people. In fact, last year it was more like 550,000 people from all over the world will take that opportunity to put themselves into the ballot.
And obviously, years ago, there used to be a case that if you entered five times, you were guaranteed to get in the sixth time, if five in a row, wasn't it?
You weren't allowed to enter five times in the same year. But yes, there was a policy like that. But I think they had to scrap that because they realised that so many people had been made promises that there would have been no space whatsoever in the ballot furthest down the line. They would all have been taken by rejected people. Basically a random, there may be some weighting towards making sure there's equal numbers of men and women, but it's a pretty random thing. And if you don't get in this year, you just have to try again next year. But there is, as you've already mentioned, the parallel / alternative opportunity of applying for a charity for one of those guaranteed places known as a golden bond place of the sort I've mentioned before.
Yeah, and some runners will just apply directly to a charity, even alongside the same timeframes as the ballot. Now, years ago, the charities didn't really start accepting entries until quite late in the day, and that might have been August, September time. Mm. Now, of course, the charities open their entries much earlier. So yeah. A lot of runners go, look, I know my chances of getting in through the ballot are slim to zero. Mm. So actually, I'm just going to secure my charity entry very early. So this is one of the things that runners do need to be aware of, that the charities are open, not all of them, but a lot of them are open early. And I know we'll come on and talk about how you guys work a little bit later. Mm. But charities do accept entries very early. They do accept them before the ballot results have even come out, sometimes before the ballot's even opened. So that's something that people need to be aware of. It's not just a case of waiting until the ballot results are out, but actually they need to move fairly sharpish. So in terms of how difficult it is to get an entry via the ballot, very slim, I think you would agree.
Extremely slim. At best, it's about a 3% chance of a place. If you're taking last year's figures, the marathon announced that 457,000 UK residents applied for a ballot place. And the figures vary from year to year, but our understanding is that even on the best estimates of how many places are available through the ballot, the chances are no better than 3%, 3 in 100. So it's clear that most people are going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Which is why it's always worth doing what we recommend, which is parallel entries. Go to the ballot just in case you're lucky, just in case you get lucky, but be looking for a charity place as well.
It's actually quite unusual to meet someone who has got an entry through the ballot, but very unusual. The other day I met someone that had got a ballot entry 2 years in a row. I think that's the first time I've ever come across anybody like that, but so they should consider themselves extremely fortunate. It's not always as easy as you'd think either to get an entry through a charity. Just because you apply, it doesn't mean it's a given. Some actually have their own ballot system.
Yes, that's true. We represent a range of charities, from very small ones with one bond, five places, to larger ones in the 50, 60, 70 range. Some of those, particularly if they are well-known causes, will be oversubscribed. Not as oversubscribed as the marathon is, but yes, they have a difficult job in making choices. To give an overall comparison, if you remember that 3% figure I quoted at best for the marathon ballot, this year I looked at our figures just recently, and one in four of the people who applied through the Crunch site for a place in LM24, one in four people were successful in securing a place. It may not significantly have been the charity they first applied for, because many of them will have applied for one of the really well-known charities that they recognize when they go onto our site. But the clue is in the wording, Charity Runners Clearinghouse. So if you are looked to us like a good candidate, but who has missed out, but you've missed out on your first choice charity, you have the option to accept your rejection and then look around elsewhere on the Crunch site. Or indeed, to be fair, because there are lots of other charities out there, we don't corner the market, to go to another charity. But within the Crunch site, once you're on the system and have given us your details, you may have been a close miss on charity A, but we might point you to charity B or C, which is operating in a similar area. So that, I think, is one of the real benefits of our system. You're not just applying to one charity. You've got a chance of looking across the board at around 30 charities.
And what's your criteria for a good candidate for a place?
You have to be prepared to give the application form, which asks some probing questions. Got to be prepared to give that some time and effort. Let's start with how not to get a place. We get probably several hundred applicants every year who appear to be dashing off applications left, right and centre and doing it in a rush and just giving us the bare minimum. So when asked to say, this is why I would like to run for this charity, if you just see something that says looks like a good cause, then we're not likely, and the charity is not likely to get excited about that. But indeed, there are some of our charities that basically, unless you can offer a sort of prior connection with the cause, give reasons why this cause is something that means something to you. There are charities that use that as a criteria. So, a kidney charity may well say you've got to be related to or have knowledge of somebody who has been or is on dialysis or has other kidney problems. So there are different criteria for different charities. But best of all, charities and we are looking for somebody that clearly feels strongly about a cause. And we will also need to get some sense from them of their fundraising plan, if you like, and where they think they're going to get the money from. Because one thing we haven't mentioned yet, but I'm sure you'll be asking me about soon, is the commitment in return for giving this precious commodity of a marathon place. The charity asks in return for a written pledge commitment, and that will vary from charity to charity.
Absolutely. So I'm interested to know how you work with the individual charities. So do you sit down with some of those charities and go through the applications? I know you offer entries on a rolling basis, don't you, whereas some charities will just have a period where they open their applications and then a point where they shut them, and then they go through all the applications and say, yeah, no, he looks good, she looks good, don't like that one. We'll offer our 10 spots to those 10 people out of our 100 applicants. Which you do yours on a rolling basis. Do you liaise with the charities throughout on the applications that come through?
Mostly, although some of our charities are so small that they don't have either many paid staff or in some cases any paid staff at all. Some of the smaller ones in that position, thanks, I think, to our long-standing relationships with them, they trust us to make judgments on their behalf. So in some cases, it will be Crunch, if you like, which usually means me making a decision on behalf of the charities. With other charities with fundraising departments and have got the personnel and so on, they will be probably more involved than me in the choices. But, you know, irrespective of who's making the choice, the applicant still needs to make the best possible case for themselves.
So you would think that quite a lot of people lose out on a spot because they just don't spend the time on the application.
Yeah, that's a common failing where we have to say this person might be quite a good runner, and they've got an impressive looking marathon time, but it's not the speed of the running. It's the quality of the fundraising and the commitment to the cause. You mentioned rolling basis. I would say more than 2/3 of our charities, once the system is open, and we'll come back to timing in a minute, more than 2/3 of our charities do offer on a rolling basis. The other third, where they're in the habit of getting more applicants than they can offer to, might set a sort of deadline. So a runner for, let's say, a charity like the Mental Health Foundation may get a message saying, thank you very much for your application. There'll now be a short delay until date X, maybe a month away, when we will get back to you with a response one way or the other.
Interesting. And in terms of timings then, when did you, so for this current cycle, when did you have the bulk of the entries full? So when did the, and obviously the runner needs a good 6 months to train, so you don't Absolutely. Want to be leaving it too late.
But
when would you say is a really key time to make sure the application's in?
Well, we were at our busiest in terms of processing applicants and moving them through the recruitment process to the magic state on our system is when they flash up as accepted. That means they've got a place on their chosen team. We were at our busiest in from, I would say, the end of July to into September. By early October, and this was unusual, perhaps influenced by those massive numbers last year, because I didn't mention that was by some way a world record in terms of numbers of people trying to enter the same marathon at one single time. So we were, the timetable last year was influenced by the mass upsurge of people that entered the ballot and then did what we suggested and tried to get a charity place at the same time. So we were largely full by late summer, early autumn, and then there were kind of just slim pickings for late arrivals.
Right, and you have a waiting list?
We do run waiting lists for the most popular charities. Some people choose to stay on those, some choose to go down the clearinghouse route and look for alternatives. But yes, I remember in the run-up to Christmas, we had several hundred people on active waiting lists. And it's not a dead-end position, to be fair, because at any time in the process, it's a kind of occupational hazard of training for the marathon and planning ahead for such a big event, that stuff is going to happen. People suddenly find they've got a bad injury from which they're not going to recover, or they're being posted overseas, or they've fallen pregnant. Mm. So we might think we've got full teams in the autumn, but there are always opportunities for, you know, some later pickings for late arrivals.
And those and that deadline for the absolute final submission isn't until quite late, is it?
No, it's later than it used to be. The marathon allows charities to enter a person for the marathon. This year, it was March the 7th, which was only, 6-7 weeks before the event. Personally, I think that's too close to the event. It leaves very little time for training if you're not already fit and ready, and even less time for fundraising. So most charities, in fact, will not offer that late in the day. The latest we normally offer, unless they're a very exceptional circumstances is probably late January, where somebody has got a full 3 months to train and fundraise for the marathon.
Yeah, and aside from not having enough time to train, what are the other sort of red flags when it comes to potential applicants when they're coming through? I presume one of them is that if a runner's run the event multiple times and fundraised multiple times, the chances of them being able to continually raise the minimum diminishes, doesn't it, as time goes on?
Yeah, there are some people that manage to keep on, you know, churning out the marathons and generating the fundraising, but it is a mini red flag, as you say, if somebody tries to impress us by saying, I've run the last six, well, they're unlikely to say the last six London marathons, but I've done six marathons in the last 6 years, and I've raised money for each of them. Our concern when the pledges are of the order, you know, they're four-figure pledges, the highest is 2,500, the average is probably 1,500 to 1,600. When you're looking for that kind of money, there's got to be a concern that somebody that just keeps on going back to the same pool of people may not be able to do it. So we won't chuck people out on that basis alone, but it would probably merit a conversation between us and them to say, how can you be confident that you're going to be able to chisel this amount of money out of your supporter base? At that time, there are other factors that may come into play. If it's somebody that's lucky enough to work for a company that has got a sort of corporate and social responsibility element to it, then they may well be able to claim match giving. And sometimes those are very generous. It could be you raise a pound and we'll chuck in a pound. So there are, you know, there are various ways in which would-be applicants can persuade us. But obviously, we, you know, you do sometimes spot things where somebody will say, I work for the NHS and I will get match giving. And, you know, we're not daft. The NHS isn't in a position. It's not a corporation or a corporate that can give match giving. So we do expect people to play fair and be honest about what their capability is. If they've got match giving, then fine. But it's something that we look at very carefully.
A Sapphire Running Zone podcast.
Do you ask for a fundraising plan or at least a broad outline of how they're going to raise the money?
Mostly we do it on trust, but we do ask people to list the sources which they will predominantly use. And we're always impressed if people come up with plans whereby it's not just holding out the begging bowl or the Just Giving page or the e-giving platform of whatever nature, but people who say, I'm a school teacher, for example, and I intend to organise a non-uniform day. If every kid in a reasonably large school pays 50p or a pound to turn up in their jeans one day, that could be £1,000 there and then. Mm. So it's a question of people looking to their strengths and telling us about them.
Mm. And you touched on minimum fundraising amounts before. They obviously took a little bit of a dip during COVID, didn't they, where the market changed quite fundamentally. Do you see those gradually inching up again now? I know you talked between, you know, the amounts between sort of 1,200 up to 2,500. Do you think they'll shift much, or do you think they'll stay where they are?
My sense from talking to our clients looking ahead to LM25 is that there will be small upward shifts, but having regard to what's going on out in the wider world, the cost of living crisis, you know, the pressures people are under financially, I think charities are being reasonable in what they're expecting. And I don't expect major shifts upwards for the majority of our clients. Mm. That said, by the same token, the same sort of pressures that apply to people individually apply to charities, which makes it all the more important that they make sensible decisions about getting people who are going to genuinely deliver on their pledges.
Yeah, and I think the sort of the message to any potential runners out there who are going to get a charity entry is that it is tight in terms of how much people are willing to commit when they sponsor you. But there is money out there, but it's just a case of going to as many different people as possible and not relying on a handful to sponsor you £100. I think those days might be on hold for the time being. Depends who you're hanging with, obviously. But I think on the whole, people are happy to sponsor you, but it might be £5 now instead of £10. I think that's the impact of the cost of living crisis. I think everybody wants to support their friend or member of the family who's running the marathon, but it might not be to quite the level it was previously. How do most of you touched on the school teacher point there, Andy, but how do most of your runners end up raising the money? I know there's a lot of social media activity, and clearly the fundraising platform, setting up a page is where it all starts. But what does an average runner's fundraising journey look like?
Social media has become the number one method, if you like. We insist that every runner has an e-giving page, whether that be the old staple original in the field, Just Giving, or one of the newer platforms. Everybody has to have a Just Giving page, because that's one way that the charity and we can monitor what's coming in. Exploiting that and promoting that on any and all social media channels, including, if you're allowed by your company, on the bottom of every email you send out, a little message saying, I'm running the London Marathon for X charity, sponsor me, click, here's the link. So I think I would say well over 50% of money probably comes in by that means. I've mentioned third-party stuff from corporates, match giving and things like that. But then events, some using methods that aren't just based on the begging bowl, but actually offer people something in return. So if you're a whiz at baking, you run bake sales at the office or wherever you may be. Or if you've got a friend who owns a pub, or you've got access to a village hall, you try and get access without paying too much, preferably for free, and you run an event, whether it be a dance or a quiz or whatever. So a lot of people, I would say possibly a quarter of money perhaps comes in through people organizing events. They're not necessarily big set pieces that require a chunk of your life, but things that you can do relatively easily amongst your friends.
Yeah, and it's really important that the people you're working with tell you about those, isn't it? And tell you rough timing, so that if you're monitoring someone's fundraising page, it might not look that great, but if you know there's a major event coming up in a month's time, you're more relaxed about it than if they don't tell you.
Absolutely. And we're much less relaxed, I have to say, about if somebody says, well, when the weather gets better after the marathon, I'm planning a five-a-side football tournament. And the trouble with that is that the obvious answer to that is, you know, I'm giving you a few trade secrets here, is we say, yeah, well, supposing the weather doesn't get better and the football tournament's rained off and you were supposed to get your 1500 quid in by the beginning of May, immediately after the marathon, everyone's left a bit high and dry, and that's an embarrassing position to be in. So charities generally will not accept the idea of a post-marathon event. I'll get round to it later. There has to be some discipline and accountability in the system, if you like.
So what happens if someone doesn't raise? You obviously monitor the pages very closely. Do you get to a point where you have to say to someone before that March deadline, I'm sorry, but you haven't stuck to the plan? And some presumably just don't raise it at all.
Well, our compliance rate is extremely high. It has to be because the charities need the money. The good news is that being in this job generally gives me a good faith in people's good nature and willingness to do the right thing. If we are, though, looking at somebody who, with a couple of weeks to go to the marathon, wouldn't necessarily be March, but as we're heading into April, who does not appear to be raising funds, what that runner has to know and will be told by us is that until race day, the place belongs to the charity, and the charity can withdraw the right to the place, the offer of the place, if you like. Now, thankfully, this happens in very, very few cases, but it's something that we do every year for a small number of people. Often they will be the people that say, look, I've made a miscalculation. They'll come to us and say, I've made a miscalculation. What can we do about it? And if there's some money on the clock, and if they appear to have made a genuine attempt, then we will talk about a decent way of doing it, which is to probably offer them a place in the following year's race with the money they've already raised being rolled over to that. But that's not so good for the charity. So we really need to see the money this year when the race is taking place. So there are ways of dealing with it. But the good news is that it happens in literally a handful of cases that people don't make it.
Yeah, and I think it's important to stress, isn't it, that this money is so important to these charities. Some of them, as you said, are very small. They rely on the money that's generated, say, £10,000 from a bond of five entries. It's crucial money in terms of the charity's ability to continue to fund research. So the message to the runner very much is, this is vital for the charity, and the earlier you start your fundraising, the better. Start your fundraising when you start your training. Operate the two of them in tandem. Don't leave it to the last minute, because it can get away from you if you're not careful.
Absolutely. Just to illustrate that point, I reckon that for at least a third of our charities, the money that comes from the marathon represents more than a third of their total income for the year.
Wow.
So that shows the kind of importance of this one event to those charities.
Wow. Right. And Andy, appreciate that. Before we wrap up, where do you see the future of fundraising and events like this? Obviously, the London Marathon's a little bit of an anomaly in And it's such an important fundraising event. One of the reasons being, of course, because it sells out and it's the only way of getting an entry for a lot of people. But where do you see events like this in the fundraising world?
Well, we decided with Crunch to try to do one thing very well and not to get diverted into other events. So I can only really speak. We only work with charities that have London Marathon Golden Bond places. So I can only really speak about this. And as you say, the London is in many ways an outlier as the most popular marathon event on the planet. I think those figures from last year were and remain world records. So while there is such an excess of demand over supply, I think for those charities lucky enough to have guaranteed marathon places, the future is reasonably bright. But I suspect that the marathon is a little bit of an island in that sense, an outlier, as I've said, because of the other changes in the way the running market is working. But this the magic thing is the excess of demand over supply, and that's really, you know, at the heart of the success of the whole Golden Bond scheme.
Absolutely. But it's a great, it's an unbelievable race. I was going to say it's a great race. It's an unbelievable race. I think any of us that have done it, it's one of those days that you never forget. And if you're able to fundraise, it just gives you another dimension, because it's not just about you, is it? It's about the charity that you're running for. So Andy, just talk us through the timings for for an average year, but let's talk about 2025. When would people start applying to Crunch?
Well, some people have already applied and are applying. If you go to crunch.org.uk right now, you'll see there's a holding page in this limbo period as we wait for LM24 to complete its cycle. There's a holding page on which you can simply enter your email address, and we will then send you a notification as soon as the full recruitment or the full application process is ready to start. By that, I mean all of the charities will be listed with their updated information, their 2025 pledge levels, and everything you need to know to make an informed choice. We expect that the site will be formally opened by the time of this year's marathon weekend. So we're talking the 20s of April. And as I've mentioned earlier, many of our charities, they won't be doing it immediately, but there may be a sort of delay into late May, early June. But the sooner you get in with a formal application for the charity that you are most interested in, the greater your chances of success. So even if we're not ready to crank up the entire process of making formal offers, charities will be monitoring people coming onto the site in those early days. And if it's like last year, some of them will be saying, please drop an email to X or Y to say that we're not quite ready to send them the 25 pledge form yet, which is part of the process, but tell them that they are being pre-offered a place. So you could theoretically, there were people last year that knew they were being offered a place as early as the first week in May. In other words, the same week that the marathon ballot was open. Not all charities operate like that, but many of them will be offering from the beginning of June onwards. So it's really any time from now on, and the site will be formally open from the end of April.
And just remind us when the London Marathon ballot results are formally announced, because the timeframes have changed, haven't they? Which then impacts dramatically on your timings.
Yeah. Yes, we've talked about when the ballot opens. You're absolutely right. The real thing is when do not when it closes, but when do the results come out? And last year it was the second week of July. That in itself triggered the most enormous upsurge in applications to our site, because the minute people get their results, and as we've said, more than 95% are going to be sorry, no is the answer. Everyone in running clubs up and down the land says, what do we do now? And they will all be flooding onto different charity sites. And thankfully, many of them will come to Crunch, and we will do our best to find them a place. So that generates a huge upsurge when the results are out. But a little word to the wise, you will be told by the marathon, once all of the dates are confirmed, when you can expect your result. Don't necessarily wait to hear your results, because you can probably predict what it's going to be. Get your application in soon after you've done your ballot application in late April or early May.
Yeah, and the beauty is, if you do get your entry through the ballot, then run for that charity anyway. It means the charity's saved an entry that can be allocated to someone else, but you've got the opportunity to raise some extra funds for them, which is a win-win for everybody, particularly.
Absolutely. Every year we end up awarding somebody a place, who then a few weeks down the line, it says, oh, guess what? I've just had my ballot result. And we say, fine, welcome to run. You're no longer bound by the demands of the pledge, although we hope you will raise as much as you can. And the place that they had previously occupied goes to another deserving person who was rejected in the ballot. So, as you say, win-win.
And often the runner who gets their own entry through the ballot goes on to raise as much money as someone who gets a charity entry, which is even better for the charity because obviously the cost to them is minimal.
Absolutely, yeah.
Great. Really appreciate it, Andy. Thank you for your time. Well, we'll do an update once the ballot results are out in the middle of the year and see how you're getting on, how many applicants you've had, and have another look at the process.
Okay, thanks very much.
Great, really appreciate it. All right, catch you again soon.
Thanks for listening to this Sapphire Running Zone podcast. Keep checking back as we have lots more podcasts coming soon.